You're listening to a DM podcast.
You might think from listening to this podcast that I don't go very wild often, but I want to tell you I've gone wild and I'm going to show you how you can go wild too. And it's not what you think. I'm talking about Wild Natural Deodorant. I made the switch to natural deodorant many, many years ago. And later in this episode, I'm going to share some of my top tips and recommendations on how you can make the switch to Wild Natural Deodorant and go wild with me. Hello and welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. I'm your host, Madeline Carafa. This is a podcast where we chat healthy habits and positive mindset to help you thrive. And welcome to the final episode of my series with the incredible Kayla Itsinas. This is episode 4 of our series in celebration of her new book, Reboot. And today we're covering quite a few topics, actually. But for anyone who isn't familiar with Kayla, she is one of the most influential and well-known people in the health and wellness industry in the world. She is a mother. She's now an author, a speaker, the co-founder of an app, Sweat, who train millions of women around the globe. And Kayla has joined me for a 4-part series where we dive into all things fitness, movement, motivation, mindset, and a sprinkle of spirituality and motherhood. We really have covered a lot of topics and it's been so beautiful to really get to know Kayla on a more personal level. She's an incredibly successful woman and highly inspirational. So if you haven't listened to the last 3 episodes, I'd highly recommend that you scroll back on your app and you deep dive into those. But today's conversation, we cover grief, we cover having a sister, time management skills, and also just juggling life with kids and a business. So lots of topics covered. Amazing episode. Kayla's always so generous with her time and her knowledge and wisdom. So let's get into today's episode. Well, hello, Kayla. Welcome back to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. 4th episode together.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm so excited to be back here. How are you? How have you been?
I'm good. I've been good.
That's good. I've been, what was it, 3 weeks ago or something I saw you now?
I can't even remember. I feel like it was yesterday.
I know. It's so weird how like quickly time goes, especially when you kind of like go back into mum mode or like normal life mode.
100%. Also, my child decided to get some disgusting daycare cold and came back home with conjunctivitis. I was like, let these days be over, please.
Oh no, that first like year of care is so hard, isn't it? With like germs. No, not at all. Oh, far out. That's hard to navigate. How do you navigate those periods? You know, like when you've got sick kids and your business doesn't just hold tight because like Kayla's got sick kids. How do you juggle all that?
I honestly just run on adrenaline.
Yeah.
And like survival mode. And I know that sounds really silly, but like, if anyone listened to this, if you ever had kids, you sort of look back on the first year and you think, wow, like even if you pumped or you breastfed, whatever it is, like you woke up every few hours, like you had to feed your baby, you had to feed your family, you had to feed yourself, you have to try and like go for a walk with some like and try and drink more water. And it's like you literally like feel, how did you do it? And you're like, I didn't. I just ran on adrenaline and survival mode and just made it work. Like you honestly, when people say you just make it work, it's so true. You just make it work.
It is so true, isn't it? And I feel like you start to understand your own strength from a mental perspective and a physical perspective too when you do realize how much you can actually go through those periods and survive them.
You're
like
so
no one's coming to pick up the pieces for you. You just got to keep moving.
No one is coming. It's so true.
Yeah. What are the main things that you do try to prioritize though in those moments when like it's, yeah, there's a lot happening, maybe it's a bit more chaotic, the sickness, what are you kind of like top things that you're like, okay, I know I at least have to prioritize these so I can stay a little bit sane and a bit healthier?
It's just like food and water. I know that's sort of the basics, but it's like food, water, and a semi-clean house. So if I feel like my house is clean, my mind is clean. When things start like getting on top of it, it feels like it's like piling on top, I start to freak out.
Yeah.
So Yeah, and I also have, like, again, a lot of help. Like, I have a lot of family that is so willing to help me, and they're sort of one of my non-negotiables, seeing them every single day. And it also, like, marries up quite well because they can help look after the kids.
Yes.
But I'm like, oh, I've had enough. And also my husband's amazing. So, that's yeah, so but, like, food and water, I just need to eat. Like, I always say to my kids, like, just need to eat. Just let mummy eat. And she'll be better, mum.
Yes, I love that. That actually takes me to a question I wanted to chat to today, because there was a video that you put up of Anna a few, I don't know, time's escaping me, maybe a week or so ago, and you were out for dinner or breakfast and Anna was drinking her little hot chocolate. It was the cutest video ever. And she said, "Mummy, are you going to eat all that?" And you showed your plate and there were some eggs left. And then she started talking about, "Mummy, Jay's going to be stronger than you." And that was so beautiful. You know, she's the same age as my daughter, 5. And I thought, wow, like, her relationship and, I guess, understanding of food at that age is incredible. What is the language and, I guess, the conversations that you've had with her, you know, over the years to help her have a really beautiful understanding of, like, food, obviously, in her world, representing energy and strength?
So we always talk about food being, you're going to get strong. We sort of, like, as a joke, not, we won't do it when she's older, but we compare her to her brother. So, like, you're going to be stronger than Jaxie. Like, you're going to, like, be able to pick him up. And, like, it's sort of celebratory as well when she eats. I'm like, oh my God, like, good job. Like, and her thing that she says to me, she goes, "We have to try things, mommy. Like, we have to try." She always, like, offers me her disgusting soggy food. She's like, "Do you want to try this?" I'm like, no. She's like, "We have to try things." So it's just all about, like, being strong, trying everything, and never, I think I overreact when she said, even last night, she was like, "I don't want that. That's disgusting." It was to do with food. And I said, "No, it's not disgusting." She goes, "Well, it's not yummy." I said, "That's okay. It can be not yummy, but it's not disgusting. We don't talk about food like that." Mm. So I just, like, make sure that she knows that food is pure. Even yesterday, there was randomly, we're in a rental, and we're just renting in where we're living. And in the cupboard was a random scale, like, it's in a scale that you step on. Yeah. And obviously the previous owners didn't take that with them. And I'm like, oh my God, like, who the hell has a scale?
Yeah.
Anyway, I put it on the ground because it was in one of my friend's rooms and I left it there. And it's in the spare room that is connected to the pool area. And Anna went in there and she saw that there's a scale. And she goes, "What does this do?" And I said, "Oh, this is what you stand on. And when you stand on it, it tells you how much medicine you're allowed to have." And so she stood on it and she was like, "How much medicine can I have?" And I said, "Okay, well, yours says this amount. That means you can have this much medicine when you're sick." And she's like, "Okay." And she goes, "You get on it." I'm like, "Oh, I can have a little bit more medicine than you." And then later that night we're at dinner and I said, "Anna, you tell everyone why you get on a scale." She goes, "To check how much medicine you can have." I'm like, "Yes, that's correct."
Oh my goodness. They're all the little things, though, that they carry as their truth, you know, and they're always going to believe what mum says. So I love those, like, they're such small little shifts in conversation, but, like, that's literally building her whole philosophy towards, yeah, food and weight and body, which is incredible. I love that.
Yeah. I don't know if I've told you this story or if I, because I've told this story a lot and I hate, like, the F word being, like, the F-A-T word. Like, honestly, it's, like, so polarizing when people say it around me. I'm like, excuse me. But when I was with one of my friends who struggled a lot her whole life with weight, she had three girls. She ended up having three girls. And her middle child one day, she was about 7 years old. And I said, "Can I take a photo of you guys all together?" Because her kids, my kids, whatever. And I took the photo and I turned the camera around. I said, "Look how good you look." And she goes, "Oh, yuck, I look fat. Take another one." And I was like, wait. And I looked at her mom and I was like, and her mom knew. And I said, "Come here," to her mom. And I was like, "You did that." I was like, she cannot, as a seven-year-old, be calling herself that. That is not appropriate reaction to a photo.
Yeah.
Like, if I took a photo of Anna, she'd be like, "Mommy, I look beautiful." Even Anna the other day covered her face in makeup to the point she looked like a clown. It was so funny. And I took a photo. She goes, "Oh, I look so beautiful, Mommy." I was like, "You do look beautiful, baby." But, like, for a little seven-year-old to turn around and say, "Oh, I look fat," she doesn't even know what that means.
No.
Like, it's hearing your parents say that. And speaking to so many women, I've noticed that a lot of their issues, 99% of the time, is how their mother spoke about food and spoke about her body. Mm-hmm. And doesn't necessarily mean she picked on the child, but she definitely picked on herself, which gave the child the feeling of, is it acceptance to speak about themselves that way? Is that, like, do you know what I mean? Like, they're just like, yeah, that's what my mom did. It's all I know.
You're modeling one thing and that's what they're, going to take too.
I never want that for my kids.
It's interesting because even the show, I know the Peppa Pig show is, there's a lot of controversy around it at the moment in the media, but that was a show that I banned really early with Georgia from a conversation perspective of them calling the daddy pig fat. And even just from that, like, oh, I don't know, when he ate food or whatever the conversation was, but I just remember hearing like this word fat used in referring to the dad. And I was like, I said to Georgia, we can't watch this show. And she, you know, she was like four, loves, you know, is drawn to it because it's bright. And I just explained to her, like, you know, we don't talk to our friends like that. We don't talk to our family members like that, you know, and we don't use that word to describe anyone's body. And, you know, like, she's similar now in that respect too, of like, she'll put on the most ridiculous outfits that I'm like, you know, glitter gumboots, like a Christmas crown, and come out. And I was like, wow, you look so beautiful. And she's like, I know, Mum, isn't this outfit just fabulous? And I'm like, yeah, it is fabulous. But I'm like, that's their inner dialogue.
Absolutely. And like, people, parents that critique their kids for what they wear, like, oh, don't take that off, that looks silly. It's like, they're not going to wear that when they're 18, 19, 20. Yeah. They're not going to wear that to work when they're older. Like, they're not, like, just let them. Like, definitely. It's the most beautiful, cutest little thing. Anna goes to the shopping center dressed as Snow White, like in a full costume, and I do not care. She goes around waving to people, and other people say, "You look so cute." Yes. No one cares. No one cares.
If anything, I think it shows a more empowering relationship between the child and the mother, that the mother is so comfortable to allow their kids to express themselves.
So right.
I've spoken about this on the podcast before, but my mum always allowed me to express myself through fashion. And I truly believe, because of that, like, it's not like I look back on my fashion senses and be like, oh, I nailed it. Like, I look back and still think, oh my goodness, Maddie, what the hell were you wearing? But at the time, I was so confident in, you know, what I was choosing to wear and the way I was showing up. And I just believe that that's because I was always allowed to do it as a kid. And like, I've taken Georgia to the shops before in like a rainbow puffer jacket, her nappy, and like boots and a beanie, because that's, she just refused to wear pants. And she's like, but Mum, this is what I want to wear. And I'm like, well, you know what, who cares, you're covered, like, you're not going out nude, so let's go.
Again, nobody cares.
Exactly. I know. And I feel like it's just helping them to have such a more positive inner dialogue as they grow up as well. I do want to know, though, obviously we're chatting, this is a fourth episode in celebration of your new book, Reboot. And I'd really love to get an understanding of, when you have a project like Reboot that is, you know, put on top of, you know, already what I can imagine is a huge workload, being a mum, running a global business, do you have any time management strategies or ways that you kind of, I guess, fit that project into an already busy schedule?
So that's a really good question, but I do want to be honest with the answer. And a lot of people ignore the fact that I actually wrote the book with Sweat, like in conjunction with Sweat, as a team with Sweat. So a lot of the stuff that is in there is already stuff that we've said. It was like an easy put together, because it was like something that we all know, we all need, and it was like the quickest, the coolest thing that we could do for women that needed a reboot. In terms of the project, though, and how I prioritize it, again, like, got to be honest, have a massive team that is like, all right, like, let's do this for this many hours a day, and let's do this for this many hours a day. And it was something that wasn't like just although it was quick, it was not thrown together. Mm. It's something that is like project manager over, like, let's say 4 to 6 months. What you're asking is how to prioritize things when you have so much on your plate as a female. Like, you know, you have so much already. And it is about really sitting down and going, okay, like, what is going to benefit me now? What is going to benefit me in the future? Like, how important is this task? Because what we do as women is we try and do everything at once. And it is just, it makes it feel like we create chaos for ourselves. It makes it feel like it's totally impossible. And then we have like our day-to-day tasks that we task ourselves with. So I think it'd be like something like sitting down, and like, that's where journaling comes in, and being like, okay, what are my non-negotiables and things that make that fill my cup? And then what are things that I've tasked myself with? Because you can't untask yourself with. If you've done the washing your whole time for your household, that is then your job and you know that you're going to do it. Like if you're the one that you know at the end of the night, you're the default parent that has to throw the dishes away or sterilize bottles or whatever, then you write down those tasks. And then you sort of assign them to a day and say like a day on my plate instead of the food would be like a day on my plate looks like this with my non-negotiables plus my daily tasks that I have to do. Where in this day do I have time to fit, you know, in writing a book, for example, or starting a new business? And if it is no time, then it's not the right time.
Yes.
It's not adding stuff on is just going to burn you out. You can start with like something like 5 minutes a day if you can slot it in and then slowly build up. Same with a workout, but not taking on a whole task. That's why you have a team of people to help you. And it doesn't have to be a team at work. It can be a team of friends or family or whatever.
I feel like that was a bit of a selfish question because I'm at the point where I've like piled new projects and organizing, you know, a baby shower for a best friend on top of like what was already felt full and then a full social calendar. And I keep saying to myself, wow, I really didn't like look forward, like I didn't look into the future and strategize this very well. Instead, I was just like, oh yeah, and now everything's falling at once and I'm like up really late at night and then the kids are up early because it's daylight savings. I'm like, okay, these are the moments where I feel like, holy shit, how does anyone do this? Because I'm at capacity right now.
Yeah, so you've overtasked yourself.
Yes, and yeah. Then like that's when the negative self-talk almost like starts to come in. And I guess I'm fortunate that I've, I guess, worked in self-development for so long now that I can catch myself so quickly. But I'm like, you know, even for me, it's like the, you can't do, like, this is impossible. You can't, you think you can do all this and you actually can't. And now everything's, you know, falling to the wayside and you're dropping the balls and you start to become your own worst enemy instead of your own best friend.
Yeah, self-critical.
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of like I said, for you, what you've done is like, haven't used a journal, haven't documented what you currently have. You haven't done your non-negotiables. You haven't done what your daily tasks are. Like you're very busy and then you task yourself with something else. So then your next task to you or my next recommendation to you would be to outreach to people to be able to help you get through this period of time. So like it would be like something like engaging like your best friend or a friend of a friend to help you with the baby shower or talking to your mom to look after the kids for a bit so you have a bit of time, like delegating tasks out temporarily. It's not a permanent thing, but temporarily to be able to get the task done is how you'd be able to do that, and you feel so much better. Also writing down what you have coming up and then actually physically crossing it off is very like satisfying for women to be like done.
Yes.
You don't have to write it down. If you listen to this, you're like not a writer. Notes in your phone or reminders. Siri is also your best friend, so you can ask her to remind you to do blah. And the only reason I'm saying it like that is because I don't want to say it out loud. I'm on my laptop at the moment. I feel like she's gonna ask and she's gonna remind me to do something that I've just said and I don't need it. So doing stuff like that, and then again, once those tasks have come down to a manageable amount, you would then go, okay, don't do that again, let's sort this out properly to see what tasks I can actually take on. Also, if you're a people pleaser, which I feel Mads, me and you are, it's really hard to say no to organizing things like a baby shower and stuff like that. So it's really about finding that time to be able to fit it in and saying, hey, not going to be able to do that.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. And would you say that this sort of stuff comes natural to you, thinking like that? Or has that been kind of processes that you've learnt over the journey?
That is not something that is natural to me at all.
Okay.
I'm a people pleaser, especially when it comes to my family. So like we've talked about how like much I just want my family to be proud of me. And they are, but I just feel this constant need to like, you know, be like, I can do it. I'll do it for you. I'm a fixer. So I want to fix everything. So it's been literally when I am not kidding, Mads, I promise you probably 2 weeks of this realization for me to be like,
wow, really?
Yeah. 2 weeks. And I've been like, okay, I do too much too fast. I can do it all but not all at once, and that's been the last like 2 weeks for me.
Biggest realization. That's so nice to know, because I sometimes find it this hard balance of like fulfilling that desire in you to want to be a certain friend or family member, but then also knowing that you have this role as a mum that's so important, and you know that's, they're like balls in the air that cannot be dropped, your children, like they're the most important. And then obviously work doesn't just like stop in a way. So it's like, correct. Yeah, it's interesting trying to, and I'm not sure if balance is the right word because I'm not sure if we ever fully find that. But I love that you talk to the actual strategies because that at least helps you feel a little bit more in control and in flow in those moments of a bit more cup being very full to the brim.
Chaos, yeah.
Chaos. I was going to say chaos and then I'm like, oh. I get a lot of questions on Instagram about this topic, and I guess it's because it's no secret that I personally do try my best to live a natural and chemical-free life when it comes to my skincare and the things that I put on my body. So something I actually did personally for my health when I fell pregnant for the first time was switching to natural deodorant. And the reason why I did that is because when I started to investigate, you know, the toxic chemicals and harmful ingredients that were actually found in more conventional deodorants, I was like, oh my goodness, why am I putting this stuff on my body? I'm growing a human life. I'm making the switch today. So I thought I would share with you some of my tips and recommendations when it does come to switching to a natural deodorant, because it's a question I get asked a lot. You know, what do I use? How do I make the switch? I sweat a lot. I really want to use natural, but I don't know where to start. So I think the first tip that you need is to find a natural deodorant that actually works. And after 5 years, I have tried a lot of natural deodorants. So I've done basically all the groundwork for you, and I'm going to share my top recommendation. And this one is for multiple reasons, and you've probably seen it flooding your Instagram, and that is for good reason. Wild is a natural deodorant that actually works. So not only does Wild natural deodorant contain all natural ingredients, it has over 98.5 natural ingredients. Like, that is huge percentage. It's also eco-friendly. First, I hate to break it to you, but you're going to have to embrace the sweat for a little bit because your body actually needs to detoxify. When you are using deodorants that hold aluminium, they are clogging your pores, which do block the sweat. Your body is actually meant to sweat. And the good part is that once you get through this detoxification stage, you are ready to go, and using natural deodorant will not be a problem. But you do have to embrace the sweat. So while you're embracing the sweat, I personally like to cleanse my armpits with a really super natural and gentle body wash or soap, and go deodorant free for at least 1 to 2 weeks if you can. Let that body sweat, and then you can start using Wild all natural deodorant. They have a really sustainable design. You get this super cute case which you can keep for life, and these biodegradable and recyclable refills. So the refills are super easy to use. You can either have a subscription base, which if you follow me on Instagram, you know as a busy mum, I'm all about the subscriptions. They'll just land in your letterbox when you're ready for them. Or of course you can do a one-off purchase, or even more conveniently, you can head to your local Priceline. So let's go wild. Go to wearewild.com and use the code healthy40 at the checkout for 40% off today. So I'm going to shift gears to a really, I guess, different topic, but something I know you've been navigating now. We spoke to this in the first episode, but you shared on your Instagram stories recently that you are navigating grief, loss for the first time, recently losing your beautiful mother-in-law, Jenny, who I know you speak just so highly of.
Yeah.
I don't even really know what the right question is here or how to frame it. But as someone that is moving through grief, and, you know, we've obviously talked about all the other balls you still have in the air and that all happening around you, life and motherhood and business, has there been any positive things or, I guess, tools or habits that have really helped you move through grief in a bit more of an easier way?
Honestly, this has been the weirdest experience for me ever. So the first thing I ever lost was my dog. And I was honestly depressed for like 6 months. And it was only, and it sounds traumatic for people who have lost, you know, multiple family members, kids, God forbid, your parents, you know what I mean? But I was so incredibly, incredibly sad. And the feelings that I went through, it was like very odd. And I know, again, it's a dog, but it was part of my family. I felt guilty for like putting on makeup. I felt guilty for like going to the gym. I just felt guilty for doing anything. I couldn't go for a walk. It was just really, really sad because it was really, really sudden. And for anyone who's ever lost anything very, very sudden, human, dog, anything, it's just very, just polarizing. You just are like, wait, this is not real life. With Jenny, my mother-in-law, we found out she had cancer probably like a year prior.
Okay.
Jenny was really, really healthy. She was an amazing, amazing mom, everything, just like a boss. And so she was at Pilates one day and she was doing her last Pilates sessions before she went on a six-week holiday away with her brother. And so at the end of the Pilates session, she coughed and she coughed up a little bit of blood. She goes, oh, I must have a chest infection. So she went to the hospital and the hospital came back with results saying, no, it's actually lung cancer. She was like, no, like, I don't have lung cancer. I am totally fine. Like,
oh my goodness.
When I say totally fine, like, I just went to Pilates. I feel great. They're like, no, it's a Mandarin-sized tumor in your lung. You need to start chemotherapy immediately. And this was like really hard. Jay has obviously lost, I don't know if anyone knows, but Jay lost his dad when he was quite young, so around 13, 14 years old, very suddenly to a heart attack. And then so to find out his mom, who was his best friend, and just like the best person in his life, never had a bad word to say about her, never annoyed him, anything, just the coolest, had cancer and got told, you know, this is, you know, a maximum of what, 8 months to a year. Jenny was so great. She turned around, she was like, stop it, I'm fighting it. And she fought it. She got lung cancer. She got a bone cancer. She got liver cancer. She got lymph node cancer. She got all the cancers.
Oh,
like, it just spread so far. And she was like, screw it, to the very end. She was like, I'm fighting this. We watched this whole journey. And then it was really in the last week, they sort of closed the books and said, look, it's going to be about a week. Like, go home, you know. So we were all there with her. Meanwhile, we've like moved over to Queensland. So she's like coming back and forth. Like, we honestly think she's going to live forever at this point.
Yeah.
And they did say, well, after they said it was going to be a week, we all went back to Adelaide. And we were there with her. It was 2 days of really good. And then everything just sort of kicked in and she passed. And when she did pass, like I said, that story of, we did touch on this. It was like very magical, curtains blowing open. And one of the things I didn't say, I don't know if I did, is when she was conscious and talking, she said she was always such a queen. Like, she always looked beautiful. She always looked amazing. And she grabbed me in a leash and she was like, don't, like, I don't like being on show. I don't want people looking over me. Like, I want my makeup done. I want my wig on. Like, I want to look. And me and Alicia were joking. We're like, we'll do your makeup. And she was like, yeah, do my makeup. We were like, are you being serious? She's like, yep. Just do my makeup. Make sure I look good. Like, lying in the bed. If I'm going to pass away, I want to look good. So I'm not even kidding. Like, people listen to this, you're going to be like, what the hell? But if you've ever had someone pass so close to you, and she was like so peaceful. She passed away and Alicia, I looked at Alicia, I was like, Alicia, we've got to do our makeup. Like, so me and Alicia got the makeup out. I'm not even kidding. So I've never seen anyone dead in front of me. Never, never. So this is the first person. I just love her so much. And I'm like, I'm honoring this promise. I'm doing her damn makeup. So we did her makeup so beautifully and we're talking to her the whole time. Even though she wasn't there, we felt like she was.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we did her makeup, put her wig on. She looked like a queen. And then the funeral home was called and then they took her away and that was the last time we saw her. And I was, like, fine. I was fine for about 12 hours. And then I was lying in bed and I was with Jay and we were trying to just – we're just lying in bed together, just what else are you going to do? And I just had the panic attack from hell. Like, I just sat out of bed. I wasn't asleep or anything. And just, like, I could not breathe. I just had this, like, wave of extreme sadness and guilt and everything and just, like, shock, real shock. And, yeah, just started crying, crying, couldn't stop crying. And then it went away. And then it's, like, weird. I don't know. Again, people listening to this, like, you understand, like, you get happy, you get sad, you get happy, you get sad.
Yeah.
And the one thing I did the next day was I went to the gym. Of all things, I was like, I know the gym makes me feel good, so I'll go to the gym.
Yeah.
So I did that. I actually ate food. So I was like, okay, we're on a good trajectory here. And then I swear to you, it was just, like, banged, crash. Like, it was, like, one good gym session, and then I was like, no. Nah. I don't know if my brain was like, don't associate gym with sadness or like, don't do this at this time, but I just had no motivation to do anything. And I just thought that everything was so pointless. Like, I don't have depression, but I was very depressed.
Yeah.
The kids weren't making me laugh like they usually do. Like, I didn't want to go to the gym. I didn't really care about food. I was like eating the most bland, like tuna on rice crackers, whatever. I didn't really care. And I'm a big food person. Like I love going out tonight. I just could care less about what I ate. Toast with butter and Vegemite, forget about it. No nutrients. And I don't know, I just was in this slump for so long, and then I was sitting on the couch and I was thinking in my head, if I do not go to the gym today, like if I don't make a change today, I would probably lose like my career. Like it'd be the end of my career. I have no motivation to be healthier and eat proper food. I have no motivation to go to the gym. I have nothing like right now. And so in my brain, I was like, get up.
Mm.
I know it's not easy for people, but like my brain was like, get up. And then so another person in my brain was like, relax, just sit down. Like you're sad. Like the devil on your shoulder. Like there's two people talking, being like, you know, like, come on. You're like, you don't have any energy to go to the gym. You're really sad. Like just relax. You never relax. And the other person was like, get up now.
Get moving.
So I was like, and I was talking to someone about meditation. So what I did was I went on to Spotify.
Yes.
And I looked up meditation music, and instead of a meditation playlist coming on, a gym playlist came on. I don't know what happened or what I clicked on, but I clicked on motivation meditation, and it didn't bring up what I wanted. It brought up this gym playlist of this man just yelling into the thing, being like, get up if you don't do your workout today. And I, honestly, I'm not even kidding. I was like, I think this just kicked me in the gear. So then what it started doing is just playing every motivational speech that has ever happened ever in history of like Muhammad Ali or like just like C.T. Fletcher, or just like bodybuilding, like Ronnie Coleman. It's just all these voices in my head. And I was like, okay, like I guess this is a sign. I guess this is a sign. And I went to the gym. I loaded up my old workout, high intensity strength, did my workout and felt really good. And from that second onwards, I've like changed my whole perspective on the gym. But like dealing with the grief felt so impossible and I felt so unfair and ridiculous. And like everyone knows how much I love Jay, and to see Jay and to look at him and see what a beautiful human he is as a result of Jenny, and then for her to not be here anymore, it was just like just constantly heartbreaking. Everything he did broke my heart. Like every time he lifted up Jax and kissed him, every time he hugged Anna, I was like,
yeah, it's like this almost double layer, because it's like you're grieving her yourself for losing someone so important in your life and a role model, and but then also watching, you know, your husband lose the most, you know, one of the most important people in his life. So,
so hard. Yeah. It's so hard. I hate it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you, you made me cry at the start when talking about her, and now I'm making you emotional. I'm similar though, in respect of like, I haven't lost anyone close, and my husband lost his dad when we were, before we had kids. And after that, I lost my nan, who was 97, but like, you know, the most important woman other than my mum in my life. And I just remember feeling like this weird, almost guilt for like grieving my nan who was 97 when he had lost like his dad that was still had so much life. And like, you know, my nan got to experience our daughter and like his dad didn't even. And it's like, I know grief is just so many layers to it, because there's just like no one way to grieve. And it's like your grief is different to Jay's grief right now. And like I remember with Ryan, like I was still grieving his dad, but like obviously in such a different way to what he was. He would say to me with my nan, it's fine, like you're allowed to grieve her, like she was so important to you. But then I felt guilty because she had such a beautiful big life and got to see all the grandkids and the great-grand, like she had 11 great-grandchildren, like amazing. But it's like it's still someone that I've lost that's so important. So, yeah, I know anyone who is navigating grief right now in any way, shape or form, or even if it's not recent and it's a couple of years, like I appreciate you sharing little strategies and things that have at least helped you, especially why your grief right now is so, I guess, fresh and a very new experience.
One of the things that I didn't understand, and like, again, if you're someone listening to this and, you know, you have someone that you love that's lost someone that they love, so you're not the person that technically lost anyone, it's them. I found it really hard to like like words were really hard. Like you don't know what to say. Actions speak so much louder than words in that point. And either give them like time for them to talk or do something actionable that they're like, that they can't do for themselves, like help them clean their house or something like that. It's a little bit more.
Those small gestures.
Small gestures that, you know, when people feel like, I don't know, it's like you feel like you can't do a thing for yourself when you're that sad.
Yeah.
So it's nice for someone to do something for you.
Definitely.
And so, yeah, that was something that was really hard. But it's after a few weeks and a few months that everyone has forgotten and they've moved on with their life. And they come to you with little problems. Like that's when it starts to get really hard. You start to see that people are moving on with their life when you haven't moved on. So you don't know how to grieve anymore because you don't feel like you have the space to because no one else cares in your mind.
Definitely. I know I've heard people say like who have lost really important people close that one of the hardest things to almost get your head around is like that life goes on. Like you've gone through something so huge and like traumatic and you can't imagine life without the person you've lost, but like everyone else's life is just like going on around them. Like I've even had friends say like going to a cafe and you look around and like everyone's still just eating and drinking and doing like all these normal things and you're like, how can this all be happening when so-and-so is not here? And yeah, even remembering things like anniversaries and that I feel like is always a really nice way. I know with Ryan, like friends that message him on his dad's anniversary, like that really is a lot, like really meaningful for him that it's like that thought is still there.
Yeah. But you know what? The other thing I'm sorry, Matt, as I was just thinking, because one of the things that I genuinely enjoyed that made me feel better was a really nice story about Jenny.
Yes.
Like I remember when she did this and it was something funny and it wasn't something sad. It was like, you know, one day I went into the office and there was like four baby Joeys running around and she was hand trying to feed them. And, you know, they're in the office trying to do all these meetings and there's all these kangaroos running around. And I was like, that's nice. Like, I like that. If you can give me a story of happiness to make me laugh and remember something that was like genuinely so happy, because what you're doing is you're remembering, the last memory you have is them passing away in the bed. So you want someone to like off your brain with something funny.
And they're kind of nice ways to, instead of just that, oh, I'm sorry, are you okay, is sharing that story, you know, like having those little moments where you can kind of relive something or why that person was special, you know, or how you viewed them. I think that that's a nice way to kind of like touch on it. I know that you have such a beautiful relationship with your sister, Leah, and I guess that's through, you know, following you both online for so many years, being able to connect with you, having you both on the podcast, and you both just speak so highly and beautifully about each other. But I'd love to know how that bond, like that you and Leah share, has impacted not only you, but also now the way that you kind of nurture Anna and Jax's relationship.
How do I even start with this?
Yeah, sorry, it's a big final question.
That is a big one. I think, again, like it comes from our upbringing. Like, so one of the things that I remember, so it, again, if you listen to this and you have kids, my mom would never let us eat apart. So we'd come home from school and my mom would always have like fruit cut up for us, vegetables cut up for us, and then she would make dinner for us, homemade meals every single night, and Greek mom. And she would make us sit at the table and we would just talk and banter. And it was just like this bond. And then my sister was like so sweet because I was so scared of the dark. Like we would like sleep in each other's room. And my mum would know that we were like running to each other's rooms and turning the lights on at night, even though she told us to go to bed. And she just let it happen. Like my dad would encourage both of us. Like my dad is like the lazy parent is the best, but lazy parenting. So he would want to watch the football. So he would task us with something that would take us like 30 minutes that we had to do together. So he's like, you know, girls, I think that today we'd be like 5 years old. He'd be like, it's time for a runway show. You got 10 minutes and you need to wear 10 jackets, 3 hats, pants and shoes. So we would run into mum's wardrobe together and be like, okay, I'll put the jacket on you. Like, you know, like it was tasks we do together. And then my dad, like after like, you know, 30 minutes of us trying to work out what outfits we were going to wear of mum's, we'd come out and like do these like poses. And my dad would like, oh, you know, like maybe change the, you know, jackets to 3 jackets and we'd run off together. And like that relationship and that building, that bond. Yeah, it was just, it was my parents. It was just how you parent them.
Yeah.
So with Anna and Jax, like I let them fight, even though like he pulls her hair, and then I let them sort of sort it out. Like I don't step in and intervene and be like, Jax is naughty, you're a good girl. Like I'm always like, he didn't mean, like then like he didn't mean, I'm like, oh, does it hurt that much? Like, do you think you can sort it out? She's like, yeah, I can sort it out. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just that.
I love that.
Yeah. I think the age difference is good too. It's like three years.
Yeah, definitely. I like that you said the sorting it out, because I had someone say that to me, like, don't always like intervene, like even though they're so young, like let them kind of sort it out, let them understand it, and also let Georgia know that Rocco's still learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that that has been a really nice conversation with her as well, of like, he's still learning to play, and to, so you are like his teacher right now and his role model. So the nicer you play with him, the nicer he's going to continue to play with you, kind of thing. But
so right.
Yeah. So much, you know, and I guess I ask that question because obviously I know you've had a really beautiful upbringing and beautiful parents, and you share such a beautiful relationship with your sister. But I know so many people listening who are navigating parenthood for the first time haven't probably been modeled that throughout their own childhood, and, you know, have those memories and experiences to lean back on. So it's often easy to think that everyone would know to do that as a parent. But if you haven't actually seen that or been modeled that or raised in that way, then these are kind of new insights and strategies.
I know this has nothing to do with anything, but also everything to do with everything, is that if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I had really crappy parents that never taught me that, and I don't have a great relationship with, you know, my sibling, and maybe it's because of that. One of the big things I've been recommending to people lately is therapy, and like going either with your sibling or by yourself and sort of working out what happened, because there is so many options to be able to change it. And sometimes it takes one person who is not your family member, who is not your brother or sister, who is not related to you, to sit back and say, hey, this might be a result of this. And yeah, like it's been, I went and it was so helpful, so helpful for me, because, and I'm calling out my mum here because I love my mum, but my mum was raised by two very Greek, very traditional parents. So if she was to say something like, I clean the whole house in Greek, they would say, good, do that every day. So when I go and clean the whole house, I'd say to my mum, I cleaned everything up. She's like, good, you should clean it up. Yeah. And that's not what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people go to compliment me, when I said, oh, I went and did this, and they're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And they overreact. I'm like, whoa. Like I'm always like, whoa, calm down. Like,
yeah.
And my best friend said, why do you do that? Like, why don't you let people say like, you're so amazing? I'm like, cause it's weird. Like, and she's like, it's not weird. And then my mum said, that's my fault.
And so then she almost like overcompensated, celebrated so much. Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing though, on her end, that she has that awareness. Like, as in that it's something she didn't get.
Now,
so then,
but now. She'll realize now, not when I was growing up. It's taken us, like I said, in the last 2 weeks, it's taken like, and even my sister, she's gone through this whole therapy and worked out so much stuff.
Yeah.
And like Leah, and you can speak to Leah separately, but she's had this whole journey with, you know, GG, postnatal depression, you know, like weight gain from, you know, an inability to be able to exercise from back injury, and then working in the food industry, and then like she went to therapy and actually sort out her life, and you can physically and mentally see both happening, and that in such a positive way right now. Everyone's like, Leah, you've lost weight, like you look amazing, you're glowing. She's like, yeah, like I went to therapy, sorted out my life, I sorted out my problems, I realized so many things were triggered by blah, and now I'm in this position.
Wow.
Like, it's the best she's ever looked, it's the best I've ever looked.
Amazing. And it's so, like, I guess people on the outside looking in would just think, like, she has it all together because she's, you know, she's an amazing mum. Leah's your sister as well, for context. But Leah has been on the show, and that was not long after she had her first daughter, Gigi, and we did speak into kind of more that postpartum journey, I guess, of depression. So that's amazing to hear that she's doing all that. I think anyone, like, no matter what your situation is, like, everyone can benefit from therapy in some way, shape or form. And I think the more awareness that you can have for your own behaviors and triggers and stuff, it's only strengthening you in so many aspects. You know, it's only ever going to be positive if it's in your business, in your relationships, in your role as a parent. Like, there's only going to be positives that come from it. It's never going to be a waste of time.
Exactly. We spoke about grief as well. Therapy is amazing for grief. Leah actually said something really interesting the other day, which is not about grief, but she said, I went to the therapist and I said, but what if this happens? And the therapist said, but what if it doesn't? And Leah was like, it really took for one person to say, but what if it doesn't?
Yes.
For me to be like, Oh, yeah. What if it doesn't happen? I'm just worrying about nothing. She's like, it couldn't be from Mitch, which is her husband.
Yeah.
Who said, that's not going to, he said, he was saying, that's not going to happen. But the therapist said, but what if it doesn't? And actually made me think. And I was like, huh. And it was so like revolutionary for her. It sounds so simple, but I'm like, that simple stuff can honestly change your life.
Totally.
When it comes to grief, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to anything, like going to see someone else is game changing. Highly recommend.
You worrying about something or fearing something happen is like basically you paying for something that you never even needed, because you're actually like handing over your energy to something that hasn't even become your reality. And all you're actually likely to do is like manifest it into your real reality. But regardless of if it happens or not, you're giving all of your energy to it and it's not even here. So you're going to double giving your energy to it if it actually does happen. And I was like, oh, that is so true. Kayla, I'm going to have to let you go, even though I don't want to. I feel like this is a sad moment because I just really want to keep chatting. But I'm just so, so grateful for you and all the energy and time you've given to this podcast series. I've absolutely loved creating it with you. You're such an inspiration and, yeah, just adore you. So thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, man. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so
glad. Made me cry twice.
Yeah. Well, you made me cry once, so we're nearly even. No, thank you. I so appreciate it, your time. And obviously, we'll have all the links for the book and Sweat in the show notes. But what's ahead? Is there anything exciting that you can share? Or are we all lip sealed at the moment?
Lip sealed for another 5 days. It will come out soon.
Okay, I'm excited. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Like always, I hope you loved this episode. If you did, please share it with a friend, a family member, someone that could use this at the moment. And if you would like to leave a review, it is always so greatly appreciated. I absolutely love reading your reviews. It is honestly one of my favorite things. And of course, if you would like to be featured as a healthy habit on the show, all you need to do is message me on at The Healthy Hustlers Instagram or at Madeline Carafa. And I would love to have you join me on the show. Thank you so much for joining me.